Thanks, Angie. We really are fortunate today to have some fantastic speakers talking about their perspectives on technology to support care coordination, and they each have a different story to tell. I think you're going to find this to be fascinating, and you'll probably see some things that are familiar, as well as learn some new things. Angie, do you want to go ahead and start my presentation for me? Thanks. So when we talk about technology, I always like to bring it back to how can technology be used to support your care coordination efforts, support your projects, rather than the other way around, you know, not having technology for its own sake. And if we focus on that patient value formula, quality divided by cost, right, if you lower quality, increase quality, lower cost, that you increase the patient value, right? And there's several ways to do that. You can see that this diagram kind of shows you all the different ways that you can impact quality. You can increase quality by using electronic health record and in particular templates and computerized provider order entry, clinical decision support. Even quality reporting itself can increase quality. The health information exchange, if you're exchanging information, whether that's via direct secure messaging or a central data repository style query-based HIE, you can also improve the quality. That's been shown over and over. Same thing with costs. We can use the EHR to lower costs in a number of ways. Probably the most common one in a hospital is by implementing a strong materials management system, a system that really can put some controls around purchasing and analysis of purchases. But the act of putting in electronic health record should result in some improved processes in your organization as well. If it doesn't, then you probably didn't put the EHR in right, correct? So if you think about today, a lot of folks are re-looking at how they did their electronic health record and how they can improve their processes to really take into account the technology of the electronic health record. Quality reporting, again, can lower costs, certainly, and we see that over and over. And health information exchange has been shown to lower costs as well, especially for the healthcare system as a whole. Exchange of information is very, very important and can make a big difference. And then finally, you can impact patient value directly with patient portals. You know, if you think about a patient having the ability to access their information and if they're really, truly engaged in their care, that can definitely increase patient value directly. Okay, I just have a couple of quick slides to kind of set the stage. And one way I like to think about health IT is in components, whether it's data collection, storage evaluation, communication systems, or the HIT workforce. And some of the things that when you think about HIT as a data collection storage mechanism are electronic health records and data repositories. That's just one aspect of health IT, and I think usually that's the first one that comes into mind. But there are also communication systems. So think about direct secure messaging as a way to communicate, but so is fax. You know, we want to try to reduce or eliminate the amount of fax that we use, but it's still there. Health information exchange, of course, another communication system, the way that we can communicate between providers. And then finally, HIT workforce, that's a very broad category as well. So you think about folks that are doing training and education all the way up to clinical IT and system administrators. Those are all components, kind of the people, process, technology of HIT. So keep that in mind as we're talking about this too, that it's not just about the products you select for storing data or or doing care planning. But it's also about ways that we can communicate information and ways that we can engage and retain our workforce as well. So with that, we are going to go to the next speaker, and I believe that's Marnell. So Marnell, take it away.
All right. Thank you. I'm hoping everyone can hear me all right. Thank you all for letting me present today. I'm going to tell you a little bit about our experience with care coordination and specifically care planning around a centralized documentation platform and kind of our decisions and our processes for how we use that or how we don't use that. I am from the Community Care Alliance, and I have to apologize. I think my when I was listed as a presenter, Western Healthcare Alliance is behind my name. And so just to give you a quick little background, the Community Care Alliance is a very small company that was formed out of a network, the Western Healthcare Alliance, of 28 rural hospitals. The board of directors for the Western Healthcare Alliance came together in 2014 really with a very strong desire to remain sustainable and independent as healthcare moved from volume into value and the reimbursement methodologies that would come with that. So they formed a small company called the Community Care Alliance to really look at different ways that they could go about making this transition and still build a foundation of sustainability while remaining independent. As they did that, they looked at several different mechanisms by, you know, which to move forward and decided on accountable care organizations, and specifically Medicare Shared Savings, ACOs. So they formed two accountable care organizations and were fortunate enough to gain some ACO investment model funding along with those two ACOs. And we'll talk about that a little bit. So we have the Rocky Mountain ACO and the San Juan ACO, and the Community Care provides the management services for both of these ACOs. So all of the curriculum, all of the platforms that we use for care coordination and quality reporting and those sorts of things. Both ACOs are small. They're very rural. The Rocky Mountain ACO is 5 Northwest Colorado communities and 5 Washington communities.
They want me to be connected.
And about 19,000 beneficiaries, 9 hospitals, 28 care coordinators, about 250 physicians. And then in the San Juan ACO, we're a little bit smaller with only about 7,500 beneficiaries, 19 care coordinators, though, because we have quite a few independent and solo practices in the San Juan ACO, 4 hospitals and about 112 physicians. The big focus when we formed the Community Care Alliance in these two ACOs was around care coordination. There was a big recognition that as you move into population health and specifically value-based reimbursement, that care coordination is a critical piece of the puzzle. And so, being part of a Medicare Shared Savings program, there are some objectives and some required functions, specifically coordination. That promotion of care coordination across physicians, both acute and post-acute. And so we really focus in on what are the key components of a care coordination program. Because we were fortunate enough to secure that AIM funding, our Community Care Alliance board decided to deliver 100% of that funding, and that's really prepaid shared savings that we receive in order to build your ACO. And a lot of ACOs use that money for infrastructure, but our board decided that all of that money would go back to the participants in the ACO to reimburse for care coordination, some provider champion time, and some technology. And so this allowed us to really focus in on care coordination and build that foundational piece. We came up with these three kind of key points to to our care coordination program. We chose to let participants hire their own or reallocate staff within their practice for care coordination. We, due to the various kind of sizes and cultures within the both ACOs, we did not prescribe a discipline for our care coordinators, but we really focused on education and specifically care plans. Care plans, I think, are critical to care coordination. For us in the ACOs, it's really one of the only ways until we started to get a good baseline of data that we could objectively show that we were actually doing care coordination by producing that care plan. So we really focused in on a centralized care plan. The board had already chosen ECW for their analytics platform, and that's where all of our Medicare claims data was coming into. And one of the deciding factors, I think, behind that decision to use eClinicalWorks was that they had an additional population health platform that would support a centralized care plan, and it was called the Care Coordinator Medical Record. I think at first glance, this was a perfect solution to our documentation requirements, but of course, whenever you start to implement things, you always find some challenges with operationalizing. Care plan itself was kind of a radical change, but then asking people to go out into a separate platform, log in, and document was very difficult. And we didn't have great uptake. We started out by disseminating some overall care coordination education, and then we followed up quickly with some training around eClinicalWorks. And right away, we determined the templates that were there weren't meeting the needs of our care coordinators. We needed to build some templates that were a little more focused on the social determinants of health and not on clinical interventions. Or as I mentioned, we had a variety of different types of disciplines within our care coordination program. We have some really high-functioning medical assistants. We have some RNs. And in a couple of cases, we even have advanced practice practitioners like nurse practitioners or physician's assistants. And so it was real important for us not to have clinical interventions that would allow someone to operate outside the scope or their license. So we had to augment all of those templates. And then we started hearing from participants kind of right away when we went live in June that their providers weren't going to go out and log into ECW to look at the care plan. So they were duplicating the care plan either in their own EMR or scanning it in, and then that became a static document that wasn't really living. There were some of our care coordinators, like our RNs and our physician's assistants, who wanted more clinical interventions. So we held our ground and said, we really want you to document in this platform for 6 months, but we really just learned in about November that we were having dismal uptake on this, and so we began to really evaluate the pros and cons of using this platform. I think one of the big caveats that we learned along the way that was ECW really never meant for this particular platform to stand alone. It was designed to be part of the EMR, and so it really is nothing more than an electronic template for whatever we put in. There's no clinical information. It doesn't integrate in any way within the practice. It's just by itself. So in December, we reevaluated everything and decided to announce that we would no longer require practices to utilize our electronic platform. And so then that took away our ability to kind of monitor centralized documentation and whether care plans were actually occurring. So when we did that, we came up with some very specific criteria around how practices needed to document what their care needed to include, and presented all of that in a webinar and started off in January without having practices being required to document an ECW. We still have a few that utilize ECW. I think a good platform. If you don't have anything else and you want your care plans electronic, I think it's a very good solution. It just wasn't ideal for a lot of our practices. There was just a lot of duplication of work. And so we created also an audit tool, and we utilize this on a quarterly basis. It goes out, allows us to get back care plans and to get back some data so that we can continue to monitor our care coordination program. I'm just finishing up the end of quarter one site visit, starting to collect all those care plans and talking to practices about how their workflows are now going. And I would say for the most part that our process is working. Of course, there are always kind of those outliers. And for us at the Community Care Alliance and the boards of the accountable care organizations, a centralized method of documentation still remains the ideal solution. So we're continuing to evaluate some of our other options. We've engaged a consulting company to kind of help guide us along that path. We're including some talks with our local, at least in Colorado, our health information exchange, just to kind of see if there's some ways that we can get clinical data into that HIE and then extract that out for the purposes of the ACO and for care planning as well. So, you know, I think that's could be a viable option, and we'll just continue to evaluate things as they come along. But I think the big lesson learned is that conceptually, it was the best and most ideal solution to have everyone document in the same place. But when it came to operationalizing, we really just had to reevaluate things, and for the benefit of the program moving forward, make that decision to kind of pull back on centralized documentation, at least for this point. Does anyone have any questions?
This is Jane. I have one.
Sure.
First, I want to say thanks for a great presentation. So typically, ACOs look at their care coordination across providers, whereas your care plan was looking at care coordination as an ACO to include sort of like the community and social organizations. Did your care plan that you had set up specifically just for coordination across providers, or did that other component where you're an ACO and you're also focused on that sort of holistic social determinants approach, was that set up for that, or was there anything different in the functionality of it to account for that?
You know, ideally, we would love to have our community resources documenting in that same place. And we didn't have, we never got to the point where we gave access to our community partners for documenting in that care plan. We were definitely, the care plan itself is definitely heavy on the social determinants of health and community resources. That's an interesting point. Colorado, and specifically on the Western Slope, we are a part of the Accountable Health Communities Grant. And so we just got grant funding, and our HIE is actually looking at a pretty robust community-wide care plan that, once that's, you know, put into place, and with these grant dollars, I think it will move forward. It's something Western Colorado's looked at for a long time and just never had the resources to develop. I think now with those grant dollars, we will, and that's something that all our practices will be able to have access to. Most of them are already hooked up into the HIE. So it's definitely an option that we're looking at. We would love to be able to incorporate all of the ACO care coordination with all of the work that's going on in the accountable health communities or accountable, yeah, I think that's what it is, HCM, something like that.
Yeah.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, thanks. That's really interesting. I'm sure you guys are among the first programs that are trying that. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably, I don't think it's a heavy focus in a lot of other ACOs. As I said, with Western Colorado, it's always been kind of the push. We have very kind of advanced practices. We have a lot of practices that are very participatory in patient-centered medical home and understand the importance of including the social determinants of health. And, you know, ideally that's how you affect a population, which is what we're charged with doing. In our ACS, it happens to be the Medicare population, but yes, we're definitely focused in on all of those aspects of the care. What are the statistics? Like only 10% of a person's health is actually tied to their clinical interventions. You know, it's that 80 to 90,
yeah,
that's tied to like transportation and access to food, those sorts of things. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Great. That's really interesting. Thank you.
You bet.
Great question, Jane. And we're hoping to have more discussion towards the end of this call. So, awesome. I want to make sure we leave enough time for the other speakers. And Angie, if you want to change the slides to Diana's. And if I could ask everybody to check their phone, and if you're not speaking, put your phone on mute, please. We can hear somebody typing pretty loudly every now and then. So, thank you for changing that. If you can, put your phone on mute. If you need to, you can do *2, and it'll mute your phone here. So with that, I'll hand it over to you, Diana.
Excellent. Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? Does that seem all right?
Phone
we can.
Perfect.
Okay. All right, excellent. So thank you for having me. Like Angie had mentioned in the beginning, I'm a program manager here at the North Country Health Consortium in Northern New Hampshire. The consortium, or we also like to say NCHC, so if I start interchanging, please know that I'm talking about the same organization. We're located in Northern New Hampshire. NCHC is the only public health entity serving the region. We don't have formal public health or local public health offices or anything of that nature, so we kind of wear all of the hats that would be entailed in that. So NCHC continuously monitors the population health status in the region, and we do that to be receptive to the needs in the region and to develop innovative programming so we can continuously address the needs and, you know, apply for different grant opportunities to help us address what's going on and what we're seeing in a very disparate location. So just a little bit about the consortium and our network. Like I mentioned, we're located in Northern New Hampshire, and you'll see at the very top of New Hampshire, there's a lot of landmass that we cover. So the consortium has inherent and geographic barriers that we experience up here in accessing care and other health services. Certainly we are, you know, far from everything. We are very rural, and the winters here tend to be harsh, and travel is always difficult in that. So the population here experiences higher rates of chronic illness than the rest of the state. The consortium came together in 1997 and has served as a rural health network since. So the consortium's real role is to convene collaborators and develop relationships to really focus on the population health improvement. And in doing so, we have many different program areas, including a public health dental program. It is a mobile clinic that goes to different schools and nursing homes to address uninsured and underinsured children and their oral health needs, also providing education. We also have the Area Health Education Center here in our office. We have what we call the Integrated Delivery Network, that we're working on integrating behavioral health and physical health and primary care. We also have the Public Health Emergency Preparedness Programming here. We have a very vast substance misuse prevention program that's now focusing on the continuum of care from prevention to intervention, treatment, and recovery. And we will soon have one of the only treatment centers under our consortium umbrella of services here. So we're growing steadily. So the need for care coordination at some point is going to be even greater. But we have a broad network of health and human service partners, and as you can see on the screen there, We have 5 critical access hospitals, 4 federally qualified health centers. We have a regional community mental health center that serves the top 3 counties in the state. Long-term care facilities, as you can see, the list goes on. Many partners, and we collaborate with many of these folks very regularly in our programming. So we have great relationships. These partnerships are critical for us in increasing access and quality of care and just improving health outcomes for our population. So, very new to the consortium, we developed a training for community health workers. New Hampshire doesn't necessarily recognize community health workers and the role that they serve. There isn't a certification or licensure process. So through our Area Health Education Center here in Northern New Hampshire and Southern New Hampshire, we have really tried to bring the concept of community health workers and the value that they bring in the care team to the state. Unfortunately, it's still not recognized at the state level, but we are working actively to get that addressed by starting a coalition and whatnot. But the consortium had developed a training for community health workers a couple of years ago, and we've been able to implement that and train 3 different cohorts of community health workers. And then we were able to get some other funding to support 2 full-time community health workers. So in doing so, we started to explore different avenues for care coordination and tracking systems, and we came across this APRICOT system. And it allows for client documentation, for tracking. It's an internet-based system, so it's completely mobile wherever you have an internet connection. They do ensure security, so it's HIPAA compliant. So in 2016, so not too far off, we started to explore different platforms that would allow us to have our community health workers receiving referrals and really tracking their work with patients and clients and whatnot. And the flexibility with our program is it doesn't just have to be clinically focused. It can focus on all of those other social determinants of health that, oftentimes is difficult in a clinical setting. So, being a nonprofit organization who's, doing this as a standalone program, we are able to be receptive to the needs of many different individuals, including, their transportation needs, as we're in an area that does not have public transportation, and it's a very impoverished region. So, even having a car may be, too far-fetched for many of the folks who have some pretty complex health needs. So the really great thing for us is that we can be receptive to all of those needs. So in this APRICOT system, it's a secure and flexible software that was specifically designed for nonprofits. It's a web-based platform, like I mentioned. So it's basically a database software. So it allows for case management, client tracking, and we can track outcomes and whatnot for each patient. We can develop reports and really extract any information that's going to help us show that we're, even this community health worker model is working to improve health outcomes. Really searching for the most cost-effective and a system that was really going to allow us the flexibility to include everything we needed and to really have the control of developing the system to have all of the information that we would need, such as, these different pathways that we've developed. We really relied on a lot of consultation phone calls with the Social Solutions company that actually owns the APRICOT software. We had a lot of phone calls. We had a lot of demonstrations from them with our key staff, a lot of conversations with their sales teams. And we even requested some references so that we really felt informed that this platform was going to give us the flexibility and capacity that we were looking for. So in developing the site, and I have to admit, we've only been live for about 3 months, so this is very new to us. We are having success with it thus far, but yet it's still quite new. But we were able to customize the site in this whole form development process by working very closely with the Apricot team. They were, you know, extremely helpful. They offer a boot camp for site administrators, so we did take that 4-day boot camp, and we were really able to build this system from the ground up, and their developers were very receptive to, you know, any tweaks or edits or needs that we had. So we were able to customize the site in the form development, and we the other great part about it is that we can develop new forms or we can edit the forms ourselves. And the way that the system works is that anyone entering information, any users identified in the system, it tracks the username, the date, and the timestamp, ensuring that a supervisor or whomever can go in and monitor and manage any record access and creation. There are other controls and security settings that allows site administrators to limit who's accessing client data and who has permissions to establish the controls and access to the reports. So there really are a lot of controls in place that make this Apricot system very useful for and very secure. So Apricot uses a tiered structure, which allows developers and staff to develop subsequent forms for any additional information to be tracked for each person or entity that you enter into the system. So it creates, in essence, you create this tier one form, which serves as an individual's record. And then we have other forms that you can continuously add to their basically database. So the way that it was introduced to us is it's basically like a folder for each individual that's electronic and accessible, and you can scan documents into it if that were helpful. You can accept, you know, digital signatures. So there's really a lot of flexibility, and we're really finding that to be helpful as our community health workers are in the field using these systems. So again, like I said, this is very new, but certainly this system allows us to record and track any services delivered to patients or clients. And you can establish forms that would allow you to tie a dollar figure to the amount of time that you're spending with the clients for each individual intervention or, you know, what have you, every time you're meeting. So if that were something that you, you know, had to quantify, you could do that. You can track enrollment criteria, you know, when they started with the community health worker, any exit dates. You can ensure that your program is enrolling those who it intends to serve, you know, by monitoring, you know, the information that's going in there. You can assess progress over time by continuously going back through notes or, you know, any of those forms that you've created for an individual. We've also developed surface pathways in the system. So we were able to create well-defined pathways, encouraging individuals to develop individualized goals and intentional goals for each participant in different subject or different areas, such as health behavior, like tobacco cessation, tobacco use, those types of things. So they're individual forms that the community health worker can easily pull up and attach to that person's record if necessary or applicable. And then you can document any case notes or progress toward goals for at each intervention, including, you know, medication adherence, any cancer screenings, you know, any other social determinant needs like their housing, any income issues, etc. So for the coordination, you can record referrals, and it has the ability to track the fulfillment of the referred services, and we can use secure messaging to interact with other referring agencies. At this time, we cannot integrate with EMRs or anything of that nature, but we do have secure messaging in place so that we can still communicate pretty easily with providers and other referring agencies. And then for outcomes measurement and management, we can really ensure that clients are making the expected progress towards self-sufficiency by having these records in real time. We can create reports and get those to the referring agencies or providers, you know, in real time. And then the security piece, you know, there really are a lot of controls in place with the system so that we can limit access and ensure confidentiality and, you know, really ensure that our clients and our referring agencies that we're taking all the measures necessary to ensure, you know, the highest level of compliance with that. And then Apricot itself uses state-of-the-art equipment and technology to safeguard the system data. It uses automatic data encryption when we're entering on our end, so between the transit, between our computers and their server, all of the data is encrypted. They monitor all traffic to and from their servers. They have virus scans. There's automated system checks. And they take other measures to safeguard the data as well. You know, there's quite a substantial list that they've provided to us. Additionally, all of the data on their servers is backed up in three physical locations. So they really, you know, have assured us, we're pretty confident that we are not going to lose any data anytime soon. So one of the other features about this Apricot system is that we were able to develop a secure web link for referring agencies. So the referral processes have been established to allow providers and other network partners to easily refer patients through this link, and the referral will trigger an email alert to our community health worker staff, allowing them to begin the intake process for the individual who has been referred. So because we live in a very, very rural area with an aging workforce, we wanted to be sure that our older providers would be able to have access to these forms and to understand the processes. So we've developed and disseminated care coordination toolkits almost. So we have put them on thumb drives, we've made packets, and these contain all of the referral instructions and how they can access different referral methods, such as the web link, they can call, they can fax, et cetera. So we really have to think beyond technology in our region. So this system allows us to do that because we can be receptive to any fax or phone calls for referrals and then enter them from there. So some of the challenges that we've experienced thus far, even though this is extremely new to us still, is the development time. You can certainly expect a 3+ month window between, you know, getting the contract in place and really having your site developed and up and running. It took us about 4 months to go live, and that includes, you know, the whole development process and really investing your time and energy into how you would like these forms, what fields you would like included, and really trying to think very from the 30,000 foot view, as well as, you know, the nitty gritty details of how you would like these forms to interact. So that was a time consuming process. And then there was also the site administrator boot camp. That was another 4-day training that two of our staff members had gone through, so there is a little bit of a time commitment in that way as well, and that's that boot camp is not included in the contract, so you have to pay additionally. So there are just a couple of things, but one of the great things that we found is that they have a great online support site, lots of videos, troubleshooting tips. They have an online community forum for troubleshooting with other users. So, you know, they have a lot of the supports in place. They're very receptive. Thus far, our experience has been really great, and I think it's going to be really effective for our community health workers in all of their care coordination endeavors here. And I'm not Nancy Frank. I am sitting in for Nancy Frank, so hopefully I captured all of the information she was hoping that we would be able to deliver, and gave you a little insight into how we're using care coordination in a nonprofit public health organization.
Great job, Dan. Thank you. I want to make sure we have time for Eric is up next, and I know I'm writing down some questions, so if anybody has some questions, get ready to have a discussion. Eric, take it away.
All right, thanks a lot. Yeah, I don't know that I'll take all that long. Interestingly enough, it seems like Diana's program was very similar to mine, so it sounds like they've been doing it for a little less amount of time, but maybe that apricot system, it sounds like they're with a company that's been established for a bit longer. So I'll just talk briefly about how our program that utilizes the care coordination software. So Northeast Oregon Network is the company I work for, and we have several different community health programs, and specifically the one that we use that utilizes the software is called the Pathways Community Hub. And again, it sounds similar to what Diana's got going on over there in New Hampshire. But the basic premise of this is we use community health workers that are integrated into the healthcare system. So for example, we have community health workers with partners that are hospitals, clinics, and mental health providers. We used to have some community health workers that were integrated with some social service providers, but that ended up not really working out that well. But the community health workers address social determinants of health to help with that, you know, the 80% or 90% that Marnell was talking about, to address the key components of what helps somebody be healthy. And so our program or the software that we use is just software to help with that and keep that running efficiently and effectively, and to hopefully streamline the process and to make it so that we can document that appropriately. And the big thing that we do differently is we have a little bit different payment structure, which I'll talk a little bit about. But because of that payment structure, our partners have to use this database that we use called Clara, which I don't know, I kind of like the apricot name myself, but Clara's is what we use. So one thing, this is really my only slide, but that's the link for Clara, and that's operated by Vista Logic. We were fortunate enough when we were shopping around to find a program that would work for this, that Vista Logic over in Portland has some experience with care coordination software integrating different systems together, and so they had to do some development to get something available to use for us, but they have sort of a groundwork that is now being used by different hubs within Oregon. So currently I'm aware of two other hubs in Oregon that are using the software, and there may be some more, but at least three of us. And so that groundwork can be tweaked to or customized to meet the demands of the different hubs. Even though the work is very similar within the different hubs, there are obviously some different specifics that need to be addressed within the different Pathways programs. And so, you know, for example, our program, the community health workers have access to seven different pathways. And so that's what we built into our Clara system. And so tracking those seven different pathways that a community health worker would work on with a community member, and some of the other hubs within Oregon have upwards of 20 different pathways that are much more specific, whereas we use sort of a general pathways that are a little more vague. And so the way this is used by the community health workers, by our partner organizations, for example, in a clinic, they'll have a community health worker, and once that community health worker is referred to a community member, mostly by providers, by the docs, then they will do home visits with that community member. And what that looks like is bringing paper documents into the home, conducting an interview with the community member in their home, getting confidentiality documents signed and release of information documents signed. And then after completing that interview with the community member, they would then return to the office and upload all this stuff into Clara. And just like Diana's, it is all cloud-based. So they could do this sort of, do the uploading or the documenting off-site. But we, you know, rather than having expensive technology with you when you go into a community member's home, we find that it just works better to have paper and pen, and then you can upload that at a later time. So they would document their progress as they go through these pathways to address the social determinants of health. Also, supervisors have access to Clara, so they can take a look at what the community health worker has been doing, who they've been working with, what they've been doing working with that community member. Also, the community health worker tracks some fairly basic health information, and so that's really what we use on our end to see if we're actually making an impact with the community member with the program that we have. So there's a little bit of a, there's two things that community health workers do within Clara. They would upload documents, so that being like confidentiality forms, release of information forms, which I need to be able to see as the manager of this program to actually be able to see a physical signature on my end when I log into Clara. And then they also enter information from those different assessments as well as they're working on different pathways. And, you know, the benefit of that is with all of the community members that have been worked with within our program, we also, it sort of generates a community needs assessment. We can see if, of the hundreds of people that have been worked with, if we're always seeing the same need. So maybe there's always a need that's being identified for housing insecurity. And so we can take that and then have that community health needs identified through Clara, which has been pretty helpful when we're going to talk to different funders and such. And then also through what they enter through the initial interview, as well as the basic health information, on my end, I would be able to determine whether or not they qualify for our program. So currently, our program is focusing on adults with chronic conditions. And so, you know, we have some different criteria that community members need to meet before they would qualify for our program. And I can get online, check with a new community member. It takes me, maybe a minute or two, or a couple more to determine whether or not they meet those guidelines, and then I can just go ahead and open up enrollment status for that individual so that they, so the work that is being done we can then start paying for. And if we do get a different funding model that has different qualifying criteria, then it's really easy to just change that criteria. We can let the community health workers know, hey, you can work with this population, and it's really easy to just go in and check on who qualifies for that. So it's also, you know, in that regard, it's easy to braid funding. So if we have money coming in from HRSA or we have money coming in from a foundation, then it's pretty easy to integrate that into the system. For example, starting, I believe it's in August, we're going to have some money specifically to address tobacco cessation. And so through Clara, I'm going to be able to very easily change where that funding comes from to pay for that specific pathway with community members. And so, you know, that can be complicated or simple, and Clara can easily navigate that. So on my end, and like I said, we have a little bit different funding model, and the difference is we exclusively pay our partners based off of successfully completing outcomes. So, for example, you know, if a community health worker helps a community member to get food stamps, that is addressing a specific social determinant of health, and that would be successfully addressing that social determinant of health, and we would pay our partner for that. So if they work on something and they're not successful, let's say the community member needs to get in to see a dentist and they're unable to successfully complete that, we don't pay for that. So we only pay for successful completion of pathways. And so at the end of the month, or I guess at the beginning of the month for the previous month, I go in and draw down all of the work that a community member, that a community health worker has completed, and it just automatically pops up that last step within the pathway, the last thing that is documented for a pathway, which is tied to a payment. And as long as that is documented as being successfully completed, then it just automatically generates that invoice for me and makes it pretty easy to do, assuming there's no, you know, documentation errors or anything like that, which sometimes there are, and that has to be addressed on an individual basis. But that would be probably the biggest difference between our model and a lot of other hub models, is that we only pay for the successful completion of pathways. Let's see. Looking through my notes, seeing if I'm forgetting anything. So some of the challenges we've run into, and I'm sure that anybody getting into a system that's going to document for working on social determinants of health, and they're partnering with somebody in the healthcare system, is that there's going to be some folks that are unhappy about having to double document. So our community health workers work within a clinic, and they have an EHR. And so if they're required to document some of this work they're doing in their EHR, they then have another system they have to document this work in. And so, you know, I think some of our partners have decided that this social determinants of health work, you know, they're able to only document that in Clara, and that's adequate for the company that they work for. But others, you know, there's no way around it. They have to do some double documenting. So there's some grumbling about that with some of our partners, especially the newer ones. We've also found that some of our partners, you know, it's a new system, and so you just have to learn the system. And that's part of my job, is to go in and work with all of the new community health workers and all of the new community health worker supervisors to make sure that they know how to use Clara. And it's a fairly intuitive system. It doesn't really take that much to learn how to use, but with some of our partners, you know, if you don't spend much time working as a community health worker and documenting the work, then you just have to relearn the system every time. And we've found that with the community health workers that are exclusively working as community health workers within this program, that it's fairly easy. They don't really struggle to document a new home visit or, you know, some progress they make on a new pathway. Clara does not integrate with any electronic health records. So, you know, that's sort of ideally where we will be at some point, and that would be something we'd have to work with VistaLogic to see if we can do. That certainly isn't going to happen anytime soon, but that would be ideal. And that's, again, a barrier that a lot of our healthcare partners really struggle with, is the fact that it's just two separate systems to work with their patients. I also find, you know, that we have certain documentation requirements, obviously, and the community health workers sometimes have fairly consistent errors when they do this documentation. And so since I am working remotely, I'm not in the office of these community health workers, we just sort of have to collaborate on those errors remotely, and you know, sometimes that's not the easiest thing to do because I'm not seeing these community health workers on a daily basis. And so, you know, it's really common that a community health worker will struggle, for example, with the release of information document, because there's a bunch of different places that have to be initialed to make sure that we're HIPAA compliant, and fairly regularly there's an error there. So I'm having, with our new community health workers, I have to sort of send a lot of emails and make a lot of phone calls to make sure that gets documented and uploaded correctly. We did run into some invoicing errors, which were mostly just me learning the system a little more. So a little history, I started with this program when it first rolled out, and I was not involved with the program prior to the active rollout of things. And so, you know, things were already sort of set in motion, and I had to learn Clara after it had already been built by some other Neon staff. And so, you know, there was certainly there was a learning curve there. But we did run into some invoicing errors, which now is super streamlined and pretty easy to work to use. And we are working, you know, to refine some things and make some things a little more streamlined, especially as we're bringing in, you know, different potential funders into the program. And I think that mostly covers it. So, you know, just kind of quickly rolling or throwing this out there, and please click on that link if this is, you know, you're looking for a care coordination program, especially when trying to address social determinants of health. Histologic has been a great company for us to work for. So, yeah, check them out.
Thanks, Eric, and good job to all of our presenters today. Did anybody have any questions that they wanted to ask? Don't forget to unmute your phone, and thanks for muting your phone when you weren't speaking. You can also type in the chat box if you'd like to ask a question. Not hearing anybody speak up, I'm going to ask a quick question. For all of you, you all mentioned different providers, or not necessarily providers, but others that may be involved in care coordination. I'm wondering if any of you are working with services like transportation, food banks, or schools, and are they accessing your care coordination systems, or are you communicating with them through the care coordination system at all yet?
This is Diana. Just to mention, of course, this is a very new system for us, but we are collaborating with schools and, you know, all the social service agencies as well as the healthcare facilities in our region. So through our Mueller Express program, which is the mobile dental clinic, there is a lot of care coordination that occurs between the school nurse, the Mueller Express staff, including the hygienist, and our contracted dentist, as well as our care coordinator / CHW, community health worker. So they aren't necessarily communicating through the Apricot system yet with schools, but they are integrating the secure messaging to be able to communicate with providers and other referring agencies, such as the local Tri-County Community Action Program, who has transportation available for medical appointments and other such appointments. So that's where we are, if that's helpful.
It is. Thanks. Anybody else have anything to add?
Sure. So, you know, we do work a lot with different social service providers, and they're brought to the table when we're talking about this program, and we have quarterly meetings to talk about the program and how to roll it out and some different things we should focus on. And Clara, I definitely draw down a lot of QI reports from Clara, and I can sort of look at how many people we're working with and where we're at with different people. So in that capacity, there is some interaction with Clara, but as far as like having an actual account on Clara and accessing it directly, we don't really have that with social service providers.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I'm curious as how far people have gotten with that. Anybody else have a question or a discussion topic?
Go ahead. I was just going to ask Eric, who is in the hub? Are there not social service organizations that are in the pathway?
So we did have a social service provider that was working in the hub, and they were a contracted partner that we were paying for pathways that they were completing with their community members. But at least with that particular partner, and I'm not saying that they're not welcome to participate. They would be welcome to participate if a new social service provider wanted to take that on. But they found it was pretty difficult to get linked up with community members, and I think that might partially be because of the health requirements. So, you know, a social mm-hmm. service provider may not know specifically what the health requirements are of their community member. They really would only know the social service needs of that community member. And so they had a hard time finding, you know, a large pool of people to work with.
I see. Okay.
Joe, this is Kathleen. I'd like a question for Diana.
Okay, go ahead.
And so the other speakers talked about the challenges of having the kind of duplicative systems and getting people to accept that and participate. I might have blinked, but could you speak to that in your organization? Is that less of an issue? Are people pretty accepting of working back and forth between Apricot and their own organization system?
What's a little more unique about our system is that providers aren't necessarily accessing or entering in our Apricot system. Mostly that role is reserved for our community health workers and internal staff of our separate nonprofit entity. So we are able to provide reports and any progress notes and things like that to the providers, but we're not expecting that they're going to access the system in any way to enter any data or to extract data. So really it's something that our organization is solely using. I don't know if that's...
And you're assuming that the providers are uploading these reports into their EHR somehow and...
That's the assumption on our end. This is challenging to speak to because we're still in the building it and flying it phase. So our system is developed, but now we are really trying to get the referrals coming in and really trying to raise awareness about our community health worker program in general, because that is, again, new to us as well. So in a year, we might be able to speak a little bit more about that.
It's so exciting. And so then I guess for any of the speakers, I would also wonder if you could speak a little bit about your target population. Do you have very specific criteria, or is it wide open? It sounds like some work with pediatrics, but I'm not sure if all of you do.
So this is Marnell, and we're Medicare, strictly Medicare. Being in the Medicare Shared Savings Program right now, our population is Medicare. Obviously, the education that we're providing, the tools that we're now providing could be spread across populations, but for the purposes of the ACO, we're just managing Medicare.
And this is Diana. So for our care coordination with our community health workers, there's really a chronic disease and breast and cervical cancer focus. But through our mobile dental program, one of our community health workers also focuses on older adults in our senior centers and nursing homes, as well as our school-age children and their oral hygiene needs.
This is Jane. I have another question. Just in general, are CHWs limited as far as, you know, HIPAA concerns, as far as how much they can enter into a system like this or how much data they can look at since they're technically not providers?
This is Eric. So as far as we're concerned, the community health worker would be employed by the clinic or the hospital, and so they have just as much access to access the HIPAA information as any other member of that organization. So even the front desk staff, you know, they can look up pretty much anything about an individual, and it's the same sort of thing for the community health workers that are employed by the clinics.
Okay.
I've got a quick question for Diana, if that's okay. Sure. So, Diana, it sounds like I'm a little confused. Are the community health workers, are they employed by your organization, or are they employed by the folks that you work with?
No, they're actually employed by North Country Health Consortium, my organization. So really, you know, it's a service that we can provide to assist, you know, our local healthcare entities and social service agencies and whatnot, as we can accept referrals from correctional facilities and, you know, a whole gamut of different organizations. So we are very unique in that way.
Yeah, I saw that, and it seemed like you had a really great system for accepting those referrals, which is not something that we currently have within our care coordination technology. So that was a pretty cool function you guys have.
Thanks. Yeah, we're pretty happy to be able to offer that. And like we said, we have to have many different options for referral given the different providers and their comfort levels and whatnot. So even in the age of technology, we still have to rely on paper.
Other questions do we have out there?
This is Cap. I have a question. I was wondering, folks, how much you're using some mobile technology. I know I thought of it when, Eric, you were mentioning that folks seem to be more comfortable with the home visits using paper, but, you know, there seems to be so much movement towards the mobile and having both the Clara and also the Apricot available through the internet. I was wondering if that was kind of on your radars to be using mobile technology for data gathering.
So this is Marnell again.
You know, it's certainly an option, and one of the things that it sounds like all of us really work with, I'm not sure about Marnell, but we're, you know, in a rural area, there's long drives to work with different community members. It could be upwards of, you know, an hour-long drive to go work with a community member in their home and then an hour back. So, you know, there certainly is a potential that if that community health worker did have access to the internet sort of between visits, that they could utilize that. But I don't think any of them do. And that's just because, you know, you have to sort of navigate that dynamic of having the technology with you and, more importantly, having access to the internet in some of these pretty remote areas. But it is something that they could utilize if they wanted to whenever they had access to the internet.
And this is Diana. And one of the other things that along those same lines, echoing what Eric has said, is that, you know, they have the ability to use the technology at some homes. They do have mobile computers that they bring with them that are more like, I don't know what they're called exactly, but they're like the tablet that turns into the computer. It's very interesting. So they do have the option of using that, but a lot of, you know, older folks that they might be going to see probably will not have internet. But given the long drive times, there may be instances where the community health workers won't be driving back to the office afterwards, so they may be able to go to their homes or some other community location, and then they can enter all of that data into the Apricot system. So still having that mobility and that option to really, you know, not be stuck with just the office as the prime location for entering data is still pretty helpful from a technology standpoint and mobility.
Yeah, and I would just echo all of those things. I know, you know, we definitely considered ECWs also web-based, and so that was a big consideration. And then reimbursing with that ACO investment model funding for technology, the specific intent of that was for practices who were going to be doing home visits to get technology like iPads and cell phones so that they could utilize ECW kind of on the go, and we just like Eric mentioned, we didn't have great uptake with that.
Thanks, guys. And then how about for like monitoring in the home so that the community members don't, you know, are providing data back to the clinics. Is that part of your care coordination model, the home monitoring data collection?
So this is Marnell again, and we will definitely be moving. We're focused in on telemedicine in general, and definitely some of that home monitoring, home blood pressure monitoring, telemetry even. So I think those are things that we will find as we move into value-based reimbursement models. It's very important for managing a population effectively and their utilization and their costs. So we'll definitely be looking at things like that as we move further into our ACO maturity.
Great, thanks.
And this is Diana, and we are unlikely to be using the home monitoring and whatnot unless, you know, we would really have to change our infrastructure here to include a clinical staff member, as it's just not in the scope of what our community health workers are able to do. You know, for instance, if we had a nurse on staff, we would be able to probably implement a system of that nature, but not in the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Great. And if I could chime in, this is Joe again. With regard to using mobile devices, home healthcare has had this problem figured out for over a decade now, the ability to be able to synchronize their data when they get back to a place where they have good internet. And, you know, all three of you are kind of at that cutting edge of care coordination software. I would, you know, encourage you to push on your vendors a little bit on that. I know ECW, for one, did have a mechanism for synchronization. I think they gave up on it. But that can be something that's very beneficial and allows people to enter data remotely. Any other questions? Anybody else have anything else? What a great group of presenters today. Last call for questions or discussion. Well, with that, I'll send it back to Angie. We have a little bit of housekeeping to do, I believe, and thanks for your time today. Angie?
Great. Thank you, Joe. So we are at the point in the webinar where we're going to ask you to complete the short evaluation. And while you are all doing that, I'll share some upcoming events. So July, we will have our next round of TA check-in calls, and these will be close-up calls. And so you can prepare for that. They should be on your calendars already. August 10th, there will be a peer group call followed by a webinar on August 24th. And save the dates with topics and objectives will be going out to you all via Outlook probably mid to late July. And so you can watch for those. Does anyone have any final questions or comments? All right, well, we wrapped up about 10 minutes early, so that's always good. Again, if you haven't completed the survey, we ask that you take just a second and do that for us. Otherwise, we appreciate all of your participation and are glad to have had you join us today for this webinar. The recording for this webinar, along with PDFs of the PowerPoints, will be uploaded onto the development page within the RHI network within 48 hours of today's call. So thank you so much, everyone, and have a good afternoon.